This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the Robert Pattinson to my Ben Affleck. Tim Capel, how you doing?
Oh, well, thank you for giving me honors of emo Batman?
Yes. I was hoping you would say emo Batman.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I say emo Batman, but dude, that trailer slapped.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
Man. Okay. So I'm your emo. I'm emo Batman to your sort of middle-aged daddy-ish Batman. But I think we got to go OG. Well, in cinema, Batman, Michael Keaton. And that is portrayed, I guess, by Greg Phillips. Greg, third man in the booth. What is going on?
I hit the pole. No, I did not hit the pole. I am here. I am alive. I am the man that you have to tell all your friends about. Yeah. Apparently, as done in Michael Keaton's world. So I am rolling in the shocking success of DC fandom. Which I was expecting to be somewhat of an unmitigated disaster, but it was instead a mitigated success.
Nice.
Okay. I noticed we stepped right over Christian Bale, too, which...
Oh, I love my boy Christian Bale.
I know you do.
I would rub my fingers through his hair if he were a woman, and I a woman as well.
I would rub my fingers through his hair, irrespective of that.
irrespective?
Irrespective, you like that word?
I like it.
At least I didn't say irregardless, right?
Yes.
It's not a word.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started on that, Tim. I've given up on the world as a result of that.
As a result of that, that finally pushed you over
the line. That was the one. It wasn't all the strife and war and division and racism and sexism and all that. It was making irregardless an official word. It's too far.
That last straw. Yeah, there's always something.
You never know what's going to break you.
You know, that's not an invalid reason. While we're making up words. Invalid reason. Invalid.
I've got a lot of invalid reasons.
I guess that depends on the emphasis. What are we doing? You know who else has a luxurious head of hair, though?
Who's that?
Kevin Nash?
Oh. Well, adjacent to Kevin Nash... That would be one Paul White, the giant of WCW. And why do I mention that? Well, because we aren't talking grammar tonight. We are talking the giant here on Talking WCW. And this was a pick made by, who chose this? It wasn't me. Who did this?
This was me.
Who's responsible? Greg, you're responsible.
This was Greg Phillips, one of the biggest Paul White fans you're going to find in this industry.
Well, I have to say I'm glad you did. I think that his WCW career gets sort of unfairly overlooked. I mean, because it's WCW, let's be honest. But, I mean, the reality is he spent much, much more of his time in the WWF/E at this stage. But he did get his start in WCW in the great year of 1995. Greg... Can you tell us, enlighten us on why you chose this man as our subject tonight?
Certainly. So Paul White is one of the underrated figures in wrestling in the modern era. I think he's the best guy of that size that there has been. Like the legit seven plus footers, he's the best in my opinion. He's so adaptable. He works well with any opponent. But most importantly, I picked him because people tend to forget, because we kind of remember him as this sort of like, I think, very smart, very savvy worker. People forget that when he first came on the scene in WCW, this dude was a freak of nature in the best possible way. He was doing things that he should not have been able to do at his size. A guy that big, that strong, that fast, able to do drop kicks and come off the top rope and bump around like a guy half his size, and the feats of strength that he would do, choke slamming the figures such as Roadblock. You know, he was the giant in WCW, especially once he found his way after those first like maybe 4 or 5 months. He was just a joy to watch. I looked forward to watching his matches every week when I was a kid. So I wanted to spotlight a guy that probably flies under the radar and goes underappreciated for just how good he really was.
So you are saying, cards on the table, best big man in the business.
Yeah, I think I am saying that. I think he's of that size. I think probably you'd say the Undertaker. The Undertaker was better had a better.
I wouldn't count him. I'm talking the over.
Yeah, the over seven footers. Yes, best big man. Absolutely, nobody at the super heavyweight level that to that degree ever impressed me more than Paul White. Whether it be early in his career with his athleticism or later in his career with just his savvy and ability to have good matches with a variety of opponents.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to disagree with you, Jenny. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you have ever been impressed by a big man more than Paul White?
I don't think I've ever seen a man as big as Paul White before. Okay. But I do remember him from my first watch of one of my most favorite shows ever. And so he has the honor... let's call it the honor of being in one of my favorite matches of all time, which we will get to talk about tonight. And I'm excited about it. But other than that, it's funny because I just put him in like a little box in my head. Like, this is what he does. Like, just because I love this match so much and really haven't cared beyond that, honestly. So I was glad Greg picked him as well, so I could be exposed to a couple of his matches and maybe get a new appreciation for him.
Yeah, you really chose that first match that we're going to be talking about without hesitation. So.
Yeah, I considered not doing that, but because I did want to learn about other matches, but I was like, well, the boys will cover two of those. I'm like, how many great matches does he have anyway? And then I just love this mine so much that I couldn't turn it down.
So I guess why don't we go ahead and get into it? We've been dancing around it. That first match is, you may be shocked, but it is from Halloween Havoc of 1995. This was on October the 29th of that year from the legendary Cobo Hall. And in fact, you know, Jenny, you actually picked two matches.
I did.
And this is allowed because they are both from the same show.
And I think you can't have one without the other. Honestly.
Really can't. I mean, they form a complete picture. Mm-hmm. They just go together. And it's not worth talking about one without the other. So first match... not exactly a traditional wrestling match, is it?
I guess this is my thing when it comes to some of my favorite matches are, you know, things that are involve helicopters or, you know, vehicles of some kind.
Significant production.
Yes. I don't know what to tell you. I'm from Alabama.
Yeah, well... this is the monster truck showdown between the Giant and Hulk Hogan. So this is how the Giant is making his pay-per-view debut, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's been stalking Hogan for months. He is, in fact, I mean, this is the year that the Giant debuted, 1995. A youngster. I believe he's all of 23, 24 years old.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he was not experienced as a wrestler prior to this at all. It's not like he, you know, worked the independent circuit or anything. He worked a variety of odd jobs as a bouncer. I'm seeing Bounty Hunter as well. Was introduced to Hulk Hogan, and we're sort of off to the races. You know, Hogan always wanted to work with someone of this size, just as that foil to Hulkamania. That was always the formula that really worked for him in the Federation years, of course. And you might say Hogan trying to recapture some of his former glory, because the kayfabe storyline is that the Giant is in fact the illegitimate son of Andre the Giant, great Hulk Hogan rival, of course.
Did anybody buy that?
That's what I was going to ask. Like, Greg, as a youngster, did young Greg buy this backstory here?
Yes. Yes, he did.
I love it. You sound so disappointed.
I was a youngling. I couldn't help it. I thought, my God, Andre the Giant's child is here, and he has no French accent, and he's going to take out Hulk Hogan for his sins of the past.
Well, I mean, I could see that. Like, the dude kind of looks like you could kind of see it happening.
Well, when was this, 95? I'd have been 11. So as an 11-year-old, I still kind of thought that all tall people were related to each other. So
as you do, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of like one of those things where I thought, why would wrestling lie to me?
Oh, no, not wrestling.
Oh, bless your heart.
And I mean, honestly, I think widely agreed that the worst thing Vince Russo ever did was retconning this 4 years later. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Revealing.
Deciding he didn't have to do it. He could have said that he could have maintained this backstory and said that this was Paul White's lovely adopted family and his, you know,
his stepfather, his foster father. Yeah.
Or adopted father, whatever it is. But no, he goes out of his way.
Or they could have had the big boss man exhume the bones of Andre the Giant.
Oh, my God. How do you leave that on the table?
There was a lot of ways for him to get her to go and give the line that made that feud work, which was your daddy's you're a big, nasty bastard, and your own mama said so.
That's right.
So, you know, you're right. You're right, Tim. I've never really thought about it in those terms, but you're right. That was probably
took that away from us.
That was probably the greatest crime against humanity that Vince Russo ever committed as a booker, as a writer, whatever you want to call it. Terrible.
Wow, that's a strong statement from what I understand.
Anyway, not to get off here, we have to talk about the monster truck match, which
sure do.
Jenny, I know that it is one of your absolute faves. Try to break this down for us, please.
All right, so, you know, we're on the top of Cobo Hall, which is near the place in Michigan or in Detroit, and it was taped the night before. So, what we've got is on the rooftop, we've got two like monster trucks, one with a giant arm for Hulk Hogan, and the other with what looks like a rib cage or skull. Mm-hmm. Or something very bone related to the Giant. And there's a giant circle, and one of the guys, Bigfoot creator Bob Chandler, explains that they have also put charges along the giant circle there. So, you know, if you don't blow up, then you can go over the side of the top of the building.
Okay, yes.
Of course.
So in one way or another, you're dying.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, that's just the expected outcome, I think, of this match is death.
And this is a sumo match, actually, that is being contested between monster trucks.
Which is a very important distinction because the trucks are welded together.
Yes.
So you have to strategize on how, you know, you're going to push and how you're going to steer. And it's all very technical.
Trying to get your almighty goddamn push.
Yes. So the boys get in their sumo trucks. They're welded together. And basically, it's just a push and pull with gorgeous shots from the helicopter overhead of the, all the action in the circle. So they get a couple of close calls. Like one time, Giant pushes. You have to get all four tires out of the circle in order to win. So they each get
two won't do it, right?
Nope, not two. So they each get a couple spots where they knock two of the wheels out, but they battle back. Bobby worries about them not wearing helmets, and he asks about the seat belts, which I loved. Bobby's completely worried about the fate of Hogan.
Well, what's the helmet really going to do to you if you explode
honestly,
off the building?
Right. Yeah, nothing. He also equates it to flying the space shuttle.
Stepping on my freedoms make me wear a helmet.
And it's funny because I was so excited to like talk about this. I wrote my notes in the wrong set and in the wrong place on the notebook. So it's like, go here for next notes. Okay.
Oh, wow. We've got notes within notes.
Yes. It's like noteception over here.
Noteception. I love it.
Bobby, in a bit of foreshadowing, says if something falls into that river, you wouldn't find it for months.
Oh.
And so a little bit more push and pull, and Hogan kind of unceremoniously wins. Like, it's kind of a letdown after all the hype. It's just like a, and pushed, and then that's done. So Giant stalks out. He's pissed off. Goes after Hogan, backs him up against the wall at the top of the building. They fought up on the ledge. Hogan knocks Giant off. Giant does huge pinwheel arms and falls over the side of the roof. There's the view of the dark water as it fades. Commentary is stunned by this murder that has just occurred.
Hulk Hogan's going, oh, no. Oh, no, brother.
He makes a half-hearted attempt to, like, catch him as he's pinwheeling over the side.
Well after,
Hulk Hogan
well
is so beautiful.
Well, he's clearly in shock that he's just murdered this man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They go back to commentary. Bischoff's there. He can't handle it. Like, he just walks off. Like, he's stunned. He turns it back over to Bobby, and he's like, no. But the show must go on.
Show must go on.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Anytime in wrestling someone falls and is killed, you have to continue the show. I learned that years later.
I'm pretty sure that's just, like, policy.
I think legally I would consider this one a, in my career as a prosecutor, of course, this would be a negligent homicide. In
you
fact.
Think so?
You know, he didn't deliberate. He didn't chuck him over the...
Well, I mean, he pushed him.
He did push him.
He gave him his push.
He pushed, and then he, like, did a belly flop onto the ledge, so his ass wouldn't fall down either, which I love.
Yeah, definitely. So, so we've witnessed a man's death. He has fallen into...
Isn't it crazy that we did a career about Paul White, and he only had one match?
It sure is. Somehow we're gonna get, in fact, three more matches out of this. This is the most matches we've talked here on Talking WCW.
Exactly.
You love it.
Thoughts about this before we move on to the
I hated seeing a guy die in his debut match. We'll never know what he could have been.
Was that traumatic for you?
Yeah, it was pretty bad because, you know, Hulk Hogan's never been a murderer. I remember the episode of the A-Team that Hulk Hogan was on, and he was aghast when he talked to B.A. Baracus, and he said, "You've killed a man, brother?" Mm. And this, of course, after Hulk Hogan has thrown ninjas out of a hotel or out of a hospital window to their apparent demise. But the man was flabbergasted. So I felt bad as a Hulk, let's say a lukewarm Hulkamaniac at that point that the Hulkster would have done such a thing. But he didn't mean to, obviously.
Let's face it, we're all in shock. Well, in his defense, now I'm a defense attorney here. by the law of conservation of ninjutsu, which just means if you have one ninja, like, you're going to have a hard time. It's going to be a real struggle, you know, putting away that one ninja. But if you have 1,000 ninjas, that one ninja's singular abilities are divided equally among the 1,000.
I see.
That's why they all go down so easy. You know, this is
a scientific
fact. Everyone knows. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he didn't throw all of the ninjas out of that hospital window, I take it. So it doesn't really count as a death, right? You don't count multiple ninjas being dispatched really doesn't count as fatalities. I understand.
I guess that's fair. I don't think you're being too lenient on.
If it was one ninja, I might have an issue with it. You know, if it was the Yeti, that'd be a problem. We'll get to him.
Of course, yes.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, Hogan was very troubled by this sequence of events. But what can you say about the monster truck sumo challenge that has not been said? It's in the context of our times today, I think what you can say is it is the first. No, not the first. Really, the second cinematic wrestling match, because the first cinematic wrestling match was the King of the Road match.
Exactly. Yes. So I'm glad to bring a little bit more focus on in a positive light, because I'm sure most people don't enjoy watching it, or maybe they do. I don't know. I've always thought I was a weirdo for this, but
I do wonder.
As a spectacle, it's something.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and I wonder how you make a quote unquote match like this more dramatic. You know what I mean? Where it's two
for the ending.
Trucks
besides the guy falling off the roof.
No, I mean the actual match.
The actual
of the match, which is the two trucks pushing against each other, quite sensually.
Maybe if they weren't willed, I don't know. That might get out of hand.
9 months later, a little truck was born.
Yeah, that's right. Little Bigfoot.
Like bumper as opposed to like sumo.
Maybe if like one of them flipped over or something.
Yeah.
Instead of just gotten pushed out of the little circle. Like you want it to like get pushed and then hit one of those strategically placed kinetic charges and then just go on flying. Like send the whole truck over the side of the roof.
Fuck yeah. I mean, some people say they go too far. I say they don't go far enough.
Yeah, I would agree. It's you know what, it's sort of the dungeon of the Doomsday Cage match problem, which as absurd as it is, as over the top as it is, they just don't go as far as they should. They try to save face too much. Although I don't think that the Giant's actual fall, his plunge from the roof of Cobo Hall, it's not really a safe, not really a face saving maneuver, is it? That especially how they pay that off. It's what did he get revived by the soothing waters of Lake Minnetonka? I know that's in
that's in Purple
Minnesota
Rain.
Where Michigan, I guess. Well, anyway, it's all connected. Yeah, so somehow I think he was similar to Macho Man or Hogan when he would take the diving elbow from Macho Man Randy Savage, and it would revive him on occasions. Maybe this impact rejuvenated the Giant.
Sort of for someone of the Giant's ilk, someone that's that powerful and that invulnerable to pain, I suppose it's the equivalent of a defibrillator pad, you know, when a trauma that would kill a normal man is just used to sort of resuscitate him.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't it make him look more badass if you don't explain it, you know? It's like he just made it, you know? Like he fell, then he got up, and then he walked in, and he finished the match.
If you remember, at one time, The Undertaker was murdered by Yokozuna in like 900 heels and floated into the ceiling and then came back months later. So
true. Was that his first death?
Was his first formal death, yes. Yeah. Unless you consider he was already dead before that. And then died again, and then came back, and then died again, and came back as a regular guy.
I won't count that since we didn't see it on screen. It's not a formal death.
Fair enough.
Do we think maybe the Giant had a healing factor?
I don't know. I mean, I know that we've seen through the chokeslam that when he hits somebody with the focused totality of his being, that he can do things. So he may have an inherent mutant healing ability. Yes.
Okay, I like it. Well, that's going to take us to our main event of Halloween Havoc, which is actually a conventional match between the Giant and Hulk Hogan. And this is for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship held by Hogan. Hogan, a little bit different in his approach to this match, isn't he, Jenny?
A little bit, yeah. Bobby and Tony recap us before we start. They're both still stunned. Bobby begs on his hands and knees, wanting some answers that Tony doesn't have. Tony covers his mouth like he's about to lose it. It's hilarious. I love them here. Bobby stands up and asks the crowd, does anybody have a walkie-talkie? Because he needs to get in touch with somebody who knows what happened.
He's crowdsourcing his journalism here.
God, he's so funny.
The greatest broadcast journalist that ever lived.
God, I love him. So Tony, just trying to stifle his laughter, throws it to Michael Buffer in the ring, and then you
probably
get
mutes.
Yes, then dies off camera, I'm sure. So Michael Buffer gives his extra intro, as he does. He tries to announce the Giant, but Hogan comes out instead.
Right.
Immediately, I notice that something looks real bad and real off and real weird. And it's not that Hogan isn't in yellow and red. No. It's that Hogan's face is clean shaven. And it gives me anxiety.
Yeah. Very upsetting.
I don't like it.
Doesn't look great.
I decided it was just time for a change, dude.
No.
You can't.
You changed enough. You're wearing black. It's the dark side of Hulkamania.
What's funny is that I noticed it during the sumo part, but I didn't super focus on it. I mean, there's a lot going on. But as soon as he gets in the ring and the camera hits him and he starts talking on the mic, I'm like, oh my God, no. I can't. Yeah. Why did he do it, Tim?
I couldn't tell you why he did it, because I've always thought of this. I think a lot of people thought this particular look for Hogan was sort of proto-Hollywood Hogan. He's in all the black. He's got, I mean, what is considered an edge for the goody-two-shoes babyface Hulkamania Hogan. My God, he burns up a coffee.
I drank my orange juice with pulp this morning, brother.
Exactly. He burns up a copy of The Observer in the run-up to this show.
Why don't you observe this, Dave Meltzer?
How do you get darker than that? But why would he? Why would you want to look edgy by shaving your facial hair that you've always had? I liked when he did become and properly embrace the dark side and become Hollywood Hogan. He colored his facial hair black, in fact.
I'm okay with that.
Get a jump on that here, man. Mm-hmm. You got to keep that. So it's two sort of competing.
It's like a tweener thing.
Yeah. It's just these two looks do not look right together. And this is how he's going to wrestle the match. They say that he's not wearing his proper wrestling attire. And I'm like, well, I don't know. This is maybe what he's doing now. But as we know, it does not stick. He goes back to the red and yellow, sadly. But as a match, this sure was a match, wasn't it?
It sure was. On commentary, well, he comes out and he gets the mic and he starts trying to talk. What he has to say, I'm really not sure what he's going to, like, admit
what
to the murder. But luckily, he doesn't have to explain anything because the Giant comes out and everybody's a little confused, a little stunned, don't know what's going on. Hogan is wondering if Giant is a zombie now, I guess. Because
I thought you were dead.
He runs out of the ring real quick. But then you just kind of shift into this very weird match, which upon viewing, I like more every time, which is so weird. I know. But, all right, just bear with me. So you get a bunch of pretty much just no-selling of punches. He tries to pick him up by the balls at one point and fails to do so. Giant chops away, and Bobby just egging him on in commentary the whole time. He does a choke in the corner, and then he gets Hogan on his knees in what I called the fellatio hold in the middle of the ring. For like 2 full minutes, we're doing this fellatio hold until the crowd eventually gets him on his feet. Scoop and slam on Hogan. He goes, Giant goes for the leg drop, but Hogan pops up. So they just kind of each get a bunch of kind of basic offense and defense, like back and forth. It goes on a while.
It does.
Hogan at one point knocks him over the top rope, and then Giant kind of stumbles off like he's done with the match. And it's like, you pretty much just survived a fall off the building, but the top rope fall did you in. So
that right arm of Hogan, brother.
Him and Kevin Sullivan try to walk out, but Hogan pulls him back. They get back in the ring and do sort of the same thing with some eye rakes, a sloppy backbreaker. Then they get into what I call the fuck hold, known as the bear hold, I guess. And this is for an interminable amount of time.
Yeah.
But I like it. It builds some tension. And it normally I would be bored in this, but now I'm just like, where are they going? Like, what are we doing? Literally, I don't know what is going to happen in this match. Giant gets the choke slam on Hogan for 2. Hogan kicks out. A lame-ass big boot on Giant. Scoop and slam by Giant. Leg drop. But the ref is knocked down.
Yep.
Did Jimmy Hart knock him down, or did he get knocked down?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Quite a mystery.
It is. They help him up, but then Hart attacks Hogan with the belt. And Giant goes back to the bear hug now, because that seems like a good idea to drag this out a little bit more.
Yeah, well, it's going to lead to a legendary spot.
Right. Kevin and Jimmy Hart kind of dance around while they're doing the bear hug. And then out comes Luger and Savage running in. And then there comes the Yeti.
Putting on a reverse bear hug?
Yeah, something like that. That's
never quite been seen. And Hogan has just kind of sandwiched. It's a giant Yeti sandwich.
Yes. See, this is where all the patience I had during the bear hug really pays off.
It does pay off, yes.
And then it comes in with the Yeti, who has no idea what to do, and then just does the threesome fuck hold, and they just stay there. Yeti fucks Hogan's ass.
So. As legend has it, Luger had to tell the Yeti, you've got to stop doing that, because you don't understand.
Luger is going crazy now. He
At the risk of promoting another podcast, if you guys haven't listened to Tony Schiavone's commentary on his podcast over top of this match, owe it to yourself.
We definitely have.
Yes. It's amazing.
I thought about listening to it again before the show, but I was like, no, I don't want it to turn into basically an extended plug for Tony Schiavone's podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what would Although... Let's do that. But
I know, and it's that is like when that show came alive, really.
Mm-hmm.
When they did that live watch, holy shit.
Luger racks Hogan and then Savage. The ref wakes up and then lifts Giant's hand, calls the match for him, I guess in a daze, doesn't realize what's happened.
Yeah.
And then they do the announcement that it's actually a DQ. So
yeah, it was really, really quite confusing here, because first it seems like the Giant has won, and then they sort of half-heartedly overturn it, and then they end up holding the belt up because of this, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we get our first Third World War in November with the 60-man Battle Royal. So, all slightly confusing here, but the overall effect is really chilling, isn't it? With
the only thing I don't, yes. Very chilling.
Hulkamania.
The only thing I don't like is ambiguity at the end as far as who won and who has the belt, which, I mean, they explain it, but they don't sound sure of themselves, so it's like, okay. And they then Hogan just lays prone in the ring, and then they throw it to Bobby and Tony, and they're just like, well, that's our show. And Bobby is like... looking over the arena, and he's like, people are glued to the ring, and like, you clearly see people filing to the exits. Weird ending, but I can't help but love this match. What can we do to fix the ending of this? Just have Giant win?
I mean, honestly, yeah, just let him win, let him come out with the belt, you know, like on Nitro, let him like be recognized as the champion for like a day or something. Gotcha. If you still want to strip him of the title because of the shenanigans here, cool, fine. Mm-hmm. Give it, you know, it's not a bad reason to do that battle royal if a belt gets held up, sure. But the way they sort of, I don't know, seemed like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, where Hogan lost and everybody and their brother had to come out to beat him, but he didn't really even lose the belt. It was a DQ, or was it? Like, that didn't serve anybody. Just that weird, ambiguous ending. Like, just, I don't know. Don't even do like a dusty finish. Just hold the belt up the next night or something. Who cares?
Mm-hmm. I really think it would have really ended the show with a giant. I mean, like, you needed that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, really? Mm-hmm. You've really seen all this incredible shit. And you, I mean, like, at least just do something amazing at the end. So, what do you think, Greg?
I agree. I think that they should have just put the belt on the giant even more than just one night. Like, maybe give it a little bit of intrigue. Plus, we give you intrigue to tune into Nitro to find out what's going to happen
next.
Got
a weekly show to promote. Yeah.
The giant.
Maybe that's what they thought they were doing, but they just did bad.
The freshly turned Jimmy Hart comes out and hypes up his new man, the giant. And then here comes a member of the WCW Championship Committee to say, no, you're not going to get to be the champion here. Not of this company. Listen here, Buster. We're taking that title away from you. We're going to put it on the line. We're going to have three rings set up at angles for each other. And we're going to have 60 dudes divided between the three rings. And one of them is going to be the champion. And you're going to be in that match. So it might be you. But it's not you right now. Mm. They could have easily done that. They could have gone on. You know, obviously, they could have taken that segment and stretched it on for 15, 20, 35, 40 minutes. But keep it going like that. You know, the guy's just really putting the giant and Jimmy Hart in their place, whoever this championship committee member may be. And point being, what happened to the WCW Executive Championship Committee?
Would have been Nick Bockwinkel at this point, right? Still? Or was he out? I don't know.
I don't remember him being on Nitro, but they could have used him.
Yeah, 95, you're right. I don't know that he would have. Certainly, I don't remember seeing him on Nitro. Point. Or even like past 94.
No.
I think about it.
No, I don't think so either. I think he had dementia by that point.
it's not funny.
Possibly. But. I don't know. But no, he, they,
the way that threw that out there.
It's not
James J. Dillon.
James J. Dillon, no, he wasn't there yet.
He wasn't there yet.
Your guys are right. They should have ended with the strong image of the giant holding the belt in both. I can see it now. I can picture it in my head. He's holding the belt and he just looks up and screams at the heavens. Put the belt in his hands and they go off the air with him screaming like he's in Highlander. And it should have happened, but it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Wow.
You know, and I mentioned before that a lot of this, I mean, this match, this whole time period is Hogan trying to relive his past glories, right? And this totally feels like a callback to when he lost the title to Andre, who promptly sold it to DiBiase. Like that whole swerve job, right? Which was so expertly done at the time. And it was a way of like throwing everything in the world at Hogan to get the belt off of him, which you sort of had to do back in those days, in order for it to seem convincing. But it all made sense, you know, because it all tied back to DiBiase paying everybody off. You know, you've got the Stooge referee, you've got Andre, and then Andre, of course, being willing to sell the belt to DiBiase. And it's all connected, right?
Plastic surgery.
the plastic surgery, which was a bit extra, but, you know, if you're going to commit, go all the way. Here we have a lot of moving parts as well. We have a ref bump. We have Jimmy Hart turning. I mean, that's sort of the big one, right? Is mm-hmm. Jimmy Hart turning on his longtime friend and ally, client Hulk Hogan. I mean, not long time, but in WCW terms, it's like they were...
His charge, if you will.
Yes, yes. They're like supposedly these lifelong friends or whatever. And so he's turning on Hogan. You have Kevin Sullivan running in at one point. You have Lex Luger running in, who sort of completes his heel turn, which had been teased for a few weeks since his Nitro debut.
Sting still didn't buy it, though.
Sting still didn't buy it, of course. Sting being Sting. I mean, this is the same show where he gets turned on by Ric Flair for the thousandth time, so that's all pretty much tracks.
I wasn't gonna turn on him until I got on the apron. I just thought it was a good idea. I couldn't resist.
Like thing to do. But that Luger turn seems like in and of itself that should be a big deal too. And it's just sort of another thing that happens.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that.
Then, on top of all that, you get the debut of this guy, the Yeti, to assist the Giant. And it's all just sort of, why are all these things happening? You know, it's just...
I just think it feels like, of course, the Yeti is coming out. Like,
of course, what else?
Of course, yeah. You know? Just, it's very 2020 of them.
So I was a kid, I thought the Yeti was going to be somebody that, I don't know, was recognizable. Or some famous figure, like, I don't know who I thought it was going to be. Elegante or somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, he was just some dude. Ron Reese.
He's Ron Reese, who I want to say they wanted to be the Giant originally, but He is such an oddly proportioned human being, Ron Reese. He looks like a normal... I don't even know how to describe it. He looks like a person of normal average height who is somehow like over 7 feet tall.
I love that description.
You know who he always reminded me of? Do you remember the show Night Court?
Yes.
He always reminded me of Cole from Night Court.
Yes.
A little bit, yeah.
I
can see that.
Love me some Night Court.
And I always think of him as, you know, being from the guy in the flock, right? Who was a late addition to the flock, of course. But yeah, so I think they wanted him as the Giant originally, but then Paul White came along and it was just like, he just seemed like the better option all around. Right. Even not being a trained, experienced wrestler, they're like, no, he's got the look we want. And so they gave this other gimmick to Ron Reese. So he starts out as...
the universe where Paul White is the Yeti.
I guess there would be. Yeah, you have to swap them. But the Yeti, eventually he removes the bandages and he is a ninja, right?
Ooh.
And we don't see that for very long. But that's our match. It's just a lot. They could have stretched out a lot of like the Jimmy Hart turn. You could do that here. You could go ahead and turn him and have that be what cost Hogan the title. Sure, that's fair enough. But why do Luger on the same night? Why debut the Yeti on the same night? Why have all these things happening?
Brother, it takes a lot to beat the Hulkster.
That's what it comes down to, right? That's the answer. You have
Fee, fi, fo, fum, brother.
You have to leave him on his own. Everybody turned against him. And then, like, zombies and Yeti guys around.
He can't be beaten like a mortal man. I mean, this is Hulk Hogan we're talking about.
He is the immortal Hulk Hogan, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for indulging me on that one.
No, that's great. That's so much.
Was, as a match, I mean, you know, obviously not what one would consider anything close to passable, but as a spectacle, 5 stars all the way.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I like to hear.
Okay. Wow. So that was a lot to talk about, you guys. We are 2 matches down. Now, normally we would have only 1 match to go, but because this is a special night and a special episode, we have 2 matches left, in fact. So before we get into those, why don't we hear about and learn about all the great things happening on the Place to Be Nation. Jenny,
yes, what have you got? I have a new PTB and SummerSlam 2020 reaction show with Chris Elner and Devin Hales. I haven't listened to that, but spoiler, I like the show quite a bit.
You liked the SummerSlam this year.
I did like the SummerSlam.
Good show.
Also, I like the Special Relations podcast. They are back with a new guest. His name is Scott Griscolo. They discuss SummerSlam, the Olympics, Great British Rock, and more.
Wow.
On the 10th episode of Body Pressure Luck, Ryan Everett is still the champion, but he takes on returning players Steve Williams and Mike Pullen. So check that one out to see if he loses his crown. On a
That's some stiff competition, I will say. That's
man, yeah, they're, but they're lining Ryan them is up. A beast.
He is a beast, but it sounds like they're lining him up against Everett. They're just stacking the deck. They're you know, he might be the Hulk Hogan of Halloween Havoc 95 to Body Pressure Luck here.
Steve Williams is a Yeti. On a jam-packed second episode of NWA Crock and Roll, hosts Sean Callum and Dr. G welcome Matt Souza to look at the May 1985 Jim Crockett NWA. And you can also find former WWE superstar Colin Delaney on a new episode of Row 1, Seat 1. So that's a pretty big get for Ben. So listen to that one, too. On the NWA Saturday special, Scott and Dr. G discuss some Thunderdome before talking about the great career of the enforcer, Arn Anderson. They're really, like, giving you a bunch of matches to consider for the GWCW match ballot. So right. That's a good one.
Project.
To
the stretch to. Project.
Right, the stretch project. Also, there's a new Highway to the Impact Zone where Logan and the guys look at the 5th episode of Impact and weekly pay-per-view number 102. Lots of stuff on there. Lots of stuff on the PlayStation Nation Pop feed, too. Those shows are The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and some more. I think some new pods are coming as well to the Pop feed. Also, you can check out the North-South Connection. It is brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. You can listen to Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Farms Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more. Speaking of that stretch project, people are talking about the matches on the Place to Be Nation GWCW Facebook page, or you can find it on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Also, go to placebination.com each and every day so you can find cool articles like Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. Finally, if you want to go to our homepage, click on the Amazon banner and shop Amazon there. It helps us out with no cost to you.
Very good. And we have another thing that is no cost to you, and that is this podcast, which we are returning to right now. It's a great segue, right?
Perfect.
Taking us into our next match of the evening, this chosen by Greg Phillips. And it looks like it is from Monday Nitro, from the April 29th, 1996 Nitro, to be exact. It's another WCW World Heavyweight Championship match. Easy for me to say, the Giant versus Nature Boy Ric Flair. Quite the contrast in styles here, but another title match. What do you think, Greg? Why does this float to the top of your list?
Yes. So this match flows to the top of my list because I have a very strong memory, a very strong recollection of this match, watching it live. These two figures, these two individuals were heels at the time. And to me, it was unfathomable. Unfathomable that two heels would meet up for the world championship on Nitro in the main event, and that it would be Ric Flair and the Giant who had been feuding with Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair who had been feuding with Randy Savage. Yep. And furthermore, it was shocking to me that this bout was over with such quickness. Yes, only 5 minutes and some change. And Ric Flair was out of there, and we got a new world champion. So, spoiler alert. So it was just shocking to me. Just shocking to me that this happened. And so I would have been 12 at the time watching this. This match blew my mind because it was all action, obviously, as we'll get to. And it was pretty much an extended, not really a squash, but I guess it was over with quickness, and you got a new star made. You got Ric Flair kind of being pushed to the side for what would end up being a long time as a top-tier player. So, that's why this one made my list. And I also think it's not a great match, but I think it's a pretty good match. Between two guys, two heels, Flair chooses to work as a heel in the match to kind of build up the Giant in his offense.
Yep.
And, they go from there. I mean, we get the big introductions and everything. We get, press slam. We get all the classic sort of Flair spots. Flair goes on offense, but it takes him, cheating, going to the gonads and going to a foreign object, the knuckle dusters or whatever. And then this also, Tim and Jenny, had one of my most memorable finishes from this era. This was the the figure four is applied. The Giant looks like he's done. And then he does the zombie sit up. Look of intensity on his face, uses his reach to reach over and grab Ric Flair by the throat, pick him up out of the figure four. Flair releases the figure four, choke slam, and ladies and gentlemen, we got a new WCW World Heavyweight Champion.
It's a great visual too. The Giant just
badass
throttling Flair in the figure four, which no one had ever done, because Flair typically will face off against people his size or a little bit smaller. So just that contrast in styles, contrast in sizes really served the match well, and especially served that finish well. I definitely marked out for that because I had kind of forgotten. I'd seen this match before, but it's not one that you go back to over and over. So I'd sort of forgotten the abruptness of that finish, but it was pretty great. Flair doing his usual, he's like stalling and he's on defense for so much of this because he has to be. The Giant just has an answer for everything that Flair throws at him. As you said, he had to resort to the outside distractions and the foreign objects. And I really appreciated when he does get the low blow in. Bobby Heenan, I believe, refers to it as a muscle retransaction, which is such a great Heenanism. There's a lot to like here. Oh, you also get the great, I was going into this hoping for a lot of Ric Flair, no, no,
oh, no.
So it really delivers.
One thing besides the ending that stood out to me is when Flair hit him with the foreign object. He sold that shit like he got knocked the fuck out. And that's a big guy. And he really did he just crumpled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciated that. It was really good. Like, I thought Giant looked amazing. And Ric is just perfect. I mean, it's a perfect Ric Flair match, really, honestly, except that he lost. But what a way to lose, though. It's just extra enough to be a great Ric Flair loss.
Oh, totally.
this is to say nothing of Mongo's commentary as well. At one point, they're describing the physique of the giant, and Mongo says something like, "He ain't no gangly basketball player who looks like a stork out here running around. He's an athlete." What a way to describe it, which I'm like, is that a racist thing almost? Like, what is he even?
Unsure.
But it definitely cracked me up. Speaking of Mongo, we get a Deborah sighting at ringside, just referred to as a fan at this point, right? Who Ric Flair is making eyes at and flirting with a little bit. Gets Mongo worked up, but they're not saying she's anybody special just yet. So, sort of like that, too. And Flair's already got Woman and Miss Elizabeth at his side here. So, sort of I kind of like, this is a neat period for the Four Horsemen, I thought.
I agree. I think this was a good... A good little era of the Horsemen, and interesting era nonetheless. So yeah, and a fun match, and a fun period of Nitro, kind of before NWO, and we're wrapping up the Dungeon of Doom era, thankfully. So kind of a good. I'm glad I picked this match. Not much to it, but glad I picked it.
I am glad you picked it as well, Jenny. Did anything else jump out at you here?
No. Well, I did want to comment on Jimmy Hart still being with the Giant.
Yeah, still managing the Giant.
Yep.
So I guess he's still, I mean, well, are the Dungeon of Doom still a thing here at this point? We've gotten past the Doomsday Cage match, so I don't know. Have we kind of put them to bed? I guess they're still technically around going into the NWO era, but not really emphasized as much. And it's weird because Giant was referred to as a member of Dungeon of Doom, but he's being managed by Jimmy Hart. Like, comes out to their music, doesn't super associate with them, but he's a heel no matter how you slice it. It's just this sort of nebulous time period for the promotion. But we know what a sucker I am for 96 WCW, so I was definitely glad to see this here. I probably would have picked a 96 match, you know, true to form if you hadn't, Greg.
Very good. Yeah, I love this year from the Giant, by the way. I thought this was a great run.
Good little post-match promo, too, by the Giant. After, he has now won the title. He calls back to Havoc 95. Says that he was robbed there, should have been the champion after that match. After that show, but now he is the champion. He will be a fighting champion. So he doesn't care what anyone has to say about it, whether they like it or not. So he's sort of maintaining the heel persona, but at the same time making clear that he wants to be recognized as this fighting champion who will take on all comers. So I don't know. You think of him as a strange choice to carry the promotion here at this time period. Assuming you think of the champion as the top guy, which is, I don't know, maybe debatable here in WCW. Like, it's so weird that unless it was Hogan during this time period, the champion wasn't always the most over person on the roster and wasn't who you thought of as like the top draw necessarily. So it's an unusual and interesting move on their part. Jenny, you and I have talked about this, I think, on PTB NXT, where there's that strategy of, you know, conventional wisdom says whoever you're most over, if it's a baby face, you put the title on them. And draw for as long as you possibly can, just ride that right into the ground. Or you say the money's in the chase, put it on your top heel who can carry the promotion. And that works. And that's sort of my preferred approach.
I like it too.
And I think that the third option is keep your most over guys out of the title picture and put the belt on somebody who is still over, but maybe is not the most over, because they can still have good matches and kind of hold down the fort.
Well, so, and plus, you know, he's an attraction, sort of like Goldberg, you know, for his size.
Right. Sort of proto Goldberg.
Right.
He definitely still feels like an attraction. Like, the bloom is not really off the rose at this point, where you're just.
And he's immortal. So, I mean,
he is
the one true immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Or has a healing factor, one or the other.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, super straightforward here. Gets the belt on the Giant. And that's pretty crazy. God, I love how academic that finish is, though, coming out of figure four. Flair going down. So we should mention that Ric Flair was the champion here, whose name was still on the belt when it
Randy
had held up.
Savage.
Randy Macho Man Savage. So, yeah, I remember Flair had won the belt off of Savage earlier in the year. Was that at Super Brawl in the cage match, I want to say? So they had a nice little feud going at the time. But Randy Savage would remain in the mix throughout 96. And going into 97, underwent quite the character change, quite the redirection. The reason I bring him up is because he is going to be featured in our last belt of the evening against the Giant. It is Macho Man Randy Savage, NWO Randy Savage, in fact.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, love it. We got to get into that. Against the Giant, this at Road Wild in Sturgis. It is the, I guess it's technically the first Road Wild, because they're not calling it Hog Wild.
Do we prefer Hog Wild or Road Wild?
Hogwild's kind of a cooler name. That's a much cooler name.
Yeah.
And I understand it's, you know.
Sounds dirtier.
You know, well, that's probably why they went away from it. But, you know, I think of, when I think of Hogwild, I think of the amazing 5-star Tim Allen movie, Wild Hogs.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
And to me, that puts it over the edge for me. I got to go Hogwild as well.
It's a pile of duty shit.
Yeah.
Come on. Wow. John Travolta, Tim Allen.
So you can't even think of the other two, can you? Martin Lawrence. William H. Macy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, mustache and all.
Yeah.
That's anyway. Some sexuality right there.
Yeah.
Does that movie take place in the same universe as Old Dogs?
I think it does,
yeah.
Does it? Wild Hogs and Old Dogs.
Now, that's the crossover we need to have.
Wild Hogs and Old Dogs.
So, sort of like I used to tell Arn. When we remember they came out that movie, The Expendables, the first thing I did, I went in there and I told Hunter, I said, listen, they need to round up all the fat guy wrestlers. They need to get Bam Bam. They need to get Terry Gordy. They need to get Yokozuna. They need to get the Junkyard Dog. They need to put him in a movie, and they need to call it The Expandables.
What are we doing?
So, Randy Savage in 1997 was certainly having a very successful year.
He was having the last good, probably, in-ring year, sort of. He did his stuff with DDP, right? We're sort of not even quite past that, but taking a break from it, which I don't know. That's part of the reason I like that DDP Savage feud, is it's not on consecutive pay-per-views necessarily. It's one of those, they feud throughout the whole year and they don't have all that many matches, but it feels like they do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is NWO Savage, as we mentioned. I'm sure, given praise to him before on this show. Just the little touches, you know, where he's in the NWO black and white attire, but he still looks like Randy Savage. And
mm-hmm.
that counts for a lot with me.
Right.
goes a long way. And he's even got the personalized NWO entrance music, too. I mean, it's just the NWO theme with a bunch of, oh, yes, interspersed throughout. But it works for me. It just, I've always really dug NWO Savage. And he is working heel here against a face giant. So what? That shouldn't work, right? It seems like the classic David versus Goliath, but mm-hmm. David is a shit heel in this case. And it is a heel Randy Savage versus face giant David versus Goliath dynamic, but David is a total shit heel in this case. And it shouldn't work because you always want to cheer for Randy Savage, right? No matter who he's up against, he's just always so cool. Just that great character. And while he can be a great heel, you don't really want him to be a heel against the giant, right?
Well, I mean, why not?
Yeah, you know.
Because he's just so much smaller, and you think he just seems like he plays that scrappy sort of underdog type.
True. Very
well, especially against someone of this size.
Right, right.
But all that is to say, I didn't pick this because I thought it was a great dynamic or even because I thought it was a very good match. Spoiler, it's not a very good match. It's just sort of mm-hmm. there. But I picked this because I realized there was something of a pattern developing in our match choices. And mm-hmm. I chose this match last. And I did not want to disrupt the pattern, you see. And that pattern was the giant getting booked against top guys and beating them.
Yes. And convincingly.
Convincingly, yes. So Hulk Hogan, right off the bat, you know, his first year, not even a year into the business. I know it was screwy antics, whatever. They still put him over strong in that Havoc match. And then just crushes Ric Flair. I mean, a glorified squash, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
That 96 Nitro. Again, we're not even a year into the guy's run. And now, in 97, this is not even the first time he's gone up against Savage. The reason I picked this one is because we already covered other years, earlier years, mm-hmm. where he had matches against Savage and won. You know what I mean? So
right.
This is just another example of him putting away these top dudes pretty handily. And it's just a little bit further on in his career here in 97. I mean, the match itself, just as I said, not a lot to write home about. I did enjoy some of the antics with Miss Elizabeth on the outside, you know, the heel Savage trying to use her, you know, as the distraction and, you know, putting her in front of him and begging off, which is such a dick move, right?
Mm-hmm.
Giant just grabs her by the arms firmly, but not violently, mm-hmm. just picks her up and moves her right out of the way.
and then picks up Randy Savage and presses him over the top rope and impresses him.
Yes, yep. That was awesome.
Depositing him back in the ring. Savage is using kind of that scrappy offense. He's, you know, clipping the knee and trying to wear Giant down, get him grounded. Does a couple of like cross bodies, double axe handles. At one point, though, we see an impressive physical feat from the Giant that is a little bit rope assisted, but still nipping up while he is grounded. Which, again, just goes to your earlier point, Greg, about how someone of his size should not be able to do these things, right?
No, not at all.
I'll tell you, I was trying to find a match where he does a moonsault because I don't think we ever saw
it on TV. Wait,
what? Yeah.
No, he never did it on TV. It was something that he supposedly did in the power plant and maybe on house shows. We did see missile drop kicks, though.
We did see missile drop kicks on occasion. But that was the legend back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s internet wrestling fan days was the Giant can do a moonsault. He can do a moonsault, man. And not sure that he could later in his career after he put on significant weight. But who knows? Maybe it could be that it's told him not to do it. You know, you shouldn't be doing this.
I think when he was on Chris Jericho's podcast, he talked about that, about how he was doing things, and he was told by Hogan and Savage and others that, you know, you don't need to be doing that. A big man of your size you don't need to be coming off the top rope, brother. Work smarter, not harder, brother.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice.
Yeah. And it's helped him have longevity, arguably.
It has. Yeah. So. Sure has.
But yeah, this match was, you know, it's not a great match, but it's the other thing that I like about this match, I appreciated, it makes sense, mm-hmm. which is a small thing to say, but it makes sense. Like Randy Savage,
wrestling makes sense. It's
he's a smaller guy who is hopelessly outmatched by his younger, stronger, faster, more invulnerable opponent, and so he takes cheap shots and he goes after the legs and tries to chop him down to size. It's just a logical. Mm-hmm. A logical thing to do in a match. He's not out here trying to work on, like they're equals. They're not going out there and exchanging arm drags and hip mm-hmm. tosses and all that stuff, even though one guy is a foot taller and, you know, 100 pounds heavier than the other. Yeah. So I like the fact that they told a sensible story. It's not a great match. It did not stay its welcome, and the right result was there. I mean, the Giant was over his Rover at this point. And he needed to be put over strong. I enjoyed this. I that's another reason why I selected the Giant, is because he was an example of a guy that didn't outstay his welcome in matches. He didn't need to.
No.
You know, he had some longer matches against Sting and Luger and stuff like that, and they were fine matches. But I like the fact that he could get in, have a lot of action in his matches, and get out of there. And I think Randy Savage is a smart enough opponent to know how to pull that off, and I think he did here.
Interesting to me that Savage was actually game for this, because by Eric Bischoff's recollection, you know, listen to his podcast with Conrad too, and take a lot of things that are said there with a grain of salt. But one thing that stuck out to me is Bischoff has talked about how Savage was the type of worker who kind of understood his own legend and is his, you know, wasn't overly concerned with his spot on the card. So he wasn't particularly keen to work like a pay-per-view unless he was main event or billed as like co-main event, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just sort of a upper mid-card match here on this Road Wild pay-per-view.
Yeah, with not a lot of build.
So. Not a lot of build, yeah. It's not like they were actively feuding, really, or had some long-term... I mean, again, Savage's story at this point was a DDP, and it's kind of an exhibition match out here in front of a bunch of bikers. Like, I'm very surprised he didn't say, yeah, I think I'll just sit that one out, brother.
Yeah, I could do that. I could. Or I could sit back here and not do it, yeah.
But, I don't know. Maybe they paid him main event money. Who knows?
I was going to say, like, that makes sense. I mean, the money makes sense. Because we've talked about Sturgis crowds before. This crowd is disrespectful. Downright disrespectful.
Weren't they?
Sucked.
No pop for Savage? Give me a fucking break.
No pop for anything, really. They're just there. They're just sitting there revving their stupid motorcycles.
Yeah.
Dumb shit bikers.
That was very distracting. So, the fact that they even had anything good in this match is pretty amazing, and speaks, I think, directly to Savage. But
didn't deserve this match. Didn't deserve these shows.
And what a difference! Yeah. What a difference a year makes, because the Giant at this point is so over. Based on the strength, let's be honest, of that WCW NWO rivalry is really what got him over. And but he is, and he's looks like a star. He acts like a star. He's so much more confident in himself now. And it just jumps off the screen. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an entertaining little piece of business. Choke slams, devastating as always. I miss when he used to do the choke slam that way, falling down on his knees and slamming the guy through the mat. Just loved that finishing move. And really good stuff. Macho did his job, and I love how excited Dusty is on commentary afterwards about WCW taking the lead in the rivalry against the NWO. So
yeah, unofficially they're like keeping this tally, I guess, on this show, which is pretty cool.
Isn't it at this point like 3-1, baby?
You know what else I love about that chokeslam by the Giant is you think of the chokeslam as being a move that's very assisted, right? Very dependent on your opponent cooperating and being able to kind of get up there for it.
You didn't have to cooperate with the Giant.
No. And a lot of times dudes wouldn't or just couldn't because of, you know, issues they might have had themselves. So they'd get a little bit off the ground and he'd just haul their asses up.
I don't remember who it was in an interview around that time in one of the wrestling magazines or something like that. Maybe back when they were, whenever they were coming up with those wrestling magazines that were shoot magazines, like WOW or something was the name of it. And somebody said in there that like Paul White's natural strength was unlike anything the guy had ever felt. I can't remember which wrestler it was. He was like, the dude, like, you don't have to cooperate with him. He can just take you no matter how heavy you are, wherever you want to go. Like, he was just so freakishly strong. And you see that.
There's no sandbagging a man of his power.
No.
I love it. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those deals where I think for a long time there was that narrative of course, WCW sucked. WCW couldn't do anything right. The one that specifically pertained to Paul White was WCW does not know how to book a Giant. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Especially once he signed with WWF. And again, not to turn into a total bitch fest here against, you know, Vince McMahon and all of his terrible decisions and how every mistake that WCW has ever made, WWF/E has done the same or worse. But all that is to say, WCW kind of knew how to book a Giant. Like,
yep.
Again, these are arguably your three biggest superstars in all of wrestling that we've talked about in his matches tonight. Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Randy Savage. Hello. Maybe swap out Flair for Sting if we're keeping it focused on WCW. But big picture wise, you don't get bigger than Hogan, Flair, Savage. I don't know who's going to push back against that, but so much. And he gets pretty decisive wins against all of them. Not just in the matches we talk about, but Jenny, I told you earlier, if you had not picked that Hogan match from 95, I was going to look at a different Hogan match. There was one that he had in early January 98, just total throwaway Nitro match, right? Which you would get on those Nitros back in the day. I watched that and it's just a few minutes, straightforward singles match against Hogan, Hollywood Hogan and the Giant, and Giant pins him 1-2-3. Like, there is a distraction that leads to the finish, but Hogan still didn't do jobs like that. I mean, those deals always ended in a DQ, NWO run-in, schmoz, you know. He didn't do the distracted roll-up type pin, but here it was like Savage is on the outside, gets the ref's attention, jawing with Hogan. Hogan turns around, eats a chokeslam, gets pinned. And that was practically unheard of back then for a Hogan match. Well, it's as clean as any NWO Hogan match got outside of like Goldberg.
And you know? If you think about it, I think there's a lot you can pick apart about how they handled him on through the end of 97 into 98 and 99. But I think that if you look at the summer of 97 and into the fall even of 97, WCW was in such a great position with their roster that if something had happened with Sting, let's say he doesn't get a tan, they could have easily pivoted to either Lex Luger or the Giant as the guy that beats Hogan. That's how over they were. They weren't Sting over, but they were right there underneath him. And I think that's a testament to the Giant and a testament to their booking of him over that time. People bought him as a monster. He wasn't Ron Reese. He wasn't Roadblock. He wasn't some big lug that was not a serious factor. He was way more of a serious factor than Kevin Nash was at that point. This was a guy that you believed could beat anybody on the roster one-on-one without question. So, yeah, great booking of him for a long, long time. I agree, Tim.
Well, I mean, the booking all starts with night one where he fell off Cobo Hall. So
survived it. You established right away.
What I'm saying is that's where
starting off hot.
I mean, you don't go anywhere but up, right?
You establish him as a member of the race of immortals, and eventually he, the only one that can beat him is somebody from the Scottish Highlands.
Exactly.
Who comes to New York and wears a trench coat.
Exactly. Yes, because there can be only one.
Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez is my name. I serve the king.
Boy, that could get me off on a tangent.
I was going to say, where are we going from here?
Why is Sean Connery a Spaniard in this wonderful production? Anyway, so, and wasn't the Frenchman Christopher Lambert playing the Scott, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And actually,
talked about this? I'm sure we
have. I watched this movie a couple weeks ago, actually, because I love the movie. And watched it a couple weeks ago for the first time in several years. And I forgot that in dialogue, Sean Connery casually reveals that, in fact, while he is currently a Spaniard serving the King of Spain, he was actually born in ancient Egypt.
Oh, okay.
So he's an Egyptian. A wow. Scottish Egyptian Spaniard.
Oh.
Wow. An Egyptian Spaniard by way of Scotland.
Yes.
Exotic.
Okay. All right. Well, this does have a point, and it's that all of this mysticism is related to the giant, who sort of feels like a mythical character in WCW, even just from the jump. His size, he's so imposing, he's charismatic. We haven't talked about, he's a pretty good promo.
Not bad.
Sort of joke about how, he does the choke slam, but when he's not doing all that stuff, he isn't one of those just scream into the microphone promo dudes. He can be pretty poised and pretty deliberate. And we saw that early on in his career. So I don't know. You take somebody who looks like that, who has that ability, put them in matches against some of these larger than life figures in wrestling, and look at that. Recipe for success. He gets over massively huge. And that's to say nothing of all the the great turns that he starts out as a heel. He becomes babyface when the NWO heats up, goes back to heel, join the NWO, leaves NWO, rejoins NWO. Like, all this shit we haven't even talked about because we don't have to. He still stayed so over throughout all of it. And it just didn't matter. Who cares? You can do whatever you want with a guy like this who is that over and has that level of skill, I think, and just feels like he is so above just like a regular wrestler.
Agreed. I'm glad we did this deep dive. I appreciate the matches you guys picked.
Yes. I appreciated the whole thing. The giant was a key figure in that era of WCW. And another example that doesn't get mentioned of WCW creating a star. They did do it on occasion. They created a star in the Giant. Mm-hmm. They probably mismanaged him down the stretch. But I would argue WWE mismanaged him for the first half of his career in that company. let's not drill him too much for that. Great talent, big presence, and yet another example that we're finding on this show of the good side of WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Fan-fucking-tastic. I love it. Okay. I think that brings a close to our analysis of the Giant. This is the most matches we've talked about on one episode of Talking WCW. We accommodated four matches within our existing format. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Tricky. Whose turn is it next to pick?
That's a great question. Impossible question to answer.
Who was our last episode on?
Goldberg.
That was I chose Goldberg.
Okay. So that's your. It's you, Jenny.
You're up, Jenny.
Well, I thought it might be my turn, but I wasn't sure. I thought about what you said earlier about you were looking for a match with a moonsault in it. And I thought, I know somebody who does a good moonsault. His name is Big Van Vader.
Ooh, it's time.
It's Vader time.
It's Vader time.
Vader time.
I'm excited. This one I've kind of like looked at a couple times, shook it off every time, but I think we're ready.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some Vader matches
come
up before. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a dedicated Vader episode though. So
you know what this means? This means another excuse for me to pick a Sting match.
I knew that you would.
I'll allow it.
Before we get out of here, Jenny, you have anything else you want to tell the people about?
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I have a lot of things right now. Right here on the Place B Nation Wrestling feed, I have an episode of PTB NXT with you, Tim, and Jake, where we looked at the three episodes of TV leading up to the first TakeOver from 2014. So that's a great show. Also have a new episode of Jenny and the Gems. We did SummerSlam Spectacular from 1993, which is a great show with an amazing main event. So listen to that episode as well. I have a guest appearance on the Place of Nation Pop feed on Andy's show. It is called Laughing Theater, and we are watching Office Space. So listen to that one.
Good one.
More wrestling content from me over at the North South Connection podcast. So we're doing TNA Never Dies. Me and JT and Aaron going through the asylum years of TNA. So a new episode is available of that insane wild shit show.
I'm addicted to TNA. I have begun officially watching TNA 2002, and it's pretty bad, and I'm addicted to it. So I'm on that journey with you, and enjoy the podcast.
Well, yes, enjoy the ride, because it's crazy. It's the craziest shit I've ever watched, and that includes all of WCW. Yes. So also another show over there is the Extreme Three-Way Dance, which is great, too. We just had our first guest shot on there. Ben Zanny came in to talk about hoodies, barbed wire, and what are the other weapons? Clotheslines.
Clotheslines. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it's a great show. On my feed, I have Talk and Pop with you, Tim. I have The Journey Through Infinity with you, Tim, and JT and Scott. Our newest episode is about the Guardians of the Galaxy. I am also on Twitter at Jenny Position, and there are a couple of other things coming up, too. Tim, I might let you talk about one of those.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe I should have gone first because I just made you do all the work.
Well, you usually do it all.
So. I was going to say, you carry me through a lot of these things. And I can't say I've done any guest shots here recently. So if you want to hear more of me, just listen to the aforementioned shows that Jenny named, which I'm a part of, some of. That Talk and Pop that we did was on Unsolved Mysteries, the Netflix revival here recently, where we solved mysteries and got some good feedback on that episode, I will say. And I'm sure we'll be doing it again because they'll have another installment of Unsolved Mysteries coming, I believe, in the month of October. I want to say, so right around the corner there. But yeah, we were told that was a good episode, so I guess, you know, normally that show really sucks, but we turned in a good one there on Talk and Pop. So check that out if you enjoy some Unsolved Mysteries. And okay, joining the North South Connection and their sort of, I guess, burgeoning comics content that has recently come up, mostly a wrestling focused feed, our sister channel to Place B Nation Wrestling, the North South Connection. But you and I, Jenny, have begun a new show with our friend Sean Kidd. So Sean, kind of newer ish to podcasting and kind of building up some cachet for himself, and He is now one third of this show that we are doing called Shrink Wrapped, The Psychology of Comics, right?
Superheroes.
What did I say?
Comics.
Oh, Psychology of Comics. Wow, that would be something else entirely. No, Shrink Wrapped, if I can remember the name of my own podcast. Shrink Wrapped, The Psychology of Superheroes. And I don't know. I almost want to let that one speak for itself because it's a very odd, off-the-wall sort of podcast. A little bit experimental, where we are doing an analysis from an in-universe perspective is the best way I can attempt to explain that. And on our debut, we looked at the legendary classic Iron Man story known as Demon in a Bottle. That is issues 120 through 128 of Iron Man, the Invincible Iron Man, more specifically, Volume 1. So if you want to get a jump on this podcast, if it's something you're interested in, check out those issues of Iron Man. It is a story that we all enjoyed a great deal, but we don't really talk about that. We talk about the psychology of the lead character. So if that sounds like your bag, give a listen to Shrink Wrapped on the North-South Connection. Beyond that, follow me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8. Greg, have you anything to promote, or are you still enjoying your retirement?
I am still currently in a state of semi-retirement from the podcasting industry. I did just help my buddies, Nick, Russell, and Todd, launch a new podcasting venture, Lillo. Lillo Podcasting Network. And
Lillo.
Okay. And L-I-L-L-O. You can find us on various social platforms. If and when the HTF come back, it'll be on there. And I don't know if that'll ever happen. I still am not not eager to add onto the plate right now. But nonetheless, I support the venture. I'm part of it. And just kind of do things at our own lazy pace kind of deal. So if you like listening to stuff about comics, movies, wrestling, not so much wrestling, movies and comics primarily, go there. Music as well. If we ever come back HTF, we'll be talking about a lot of different things besides just comics. Well, comics too, probably. But nonetheless, I don't know if that will ever happen. But the only thing that's for sure about the Hard Traveling Fanboys is nothing's for sure. So if you want to keep up with some of our shenanigans, you can follow me on Twitter at gphillips8652. Occasionally, I retweet things. And other than that, that's about it. Yeah, I got nothing else to promote. Nothing of value anyway. One day I'll write my novel and make a lot of money, maybe. Probably not.
Great American novel.
That's right. Moby Dick too.
Great European novel. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be. Maybe I'll write a sequel to it. That might already exist.
There's this thing called War and Peace that might.
Yes. I knew War and Peace. I knew War and Peace, and he wasn't that nice a guy, really.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it for me.
All right, well, from the top of Cobalt Hall, I think that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Thanks,
see
guys.
You next time. Your mustache is crooked. Well, your beard doesn't look too straight either.